Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 4, season 14. On a week where we really needed the birthday boy last week, let's picture the image. Let's picture the image. Jack Benyon left us last week to go swanning off on his birthday soiree, and you could imagine what happened. I'm setting the scene for you, that his friends possibly bought him a pint. Ryan and I didn't transfer him any money, let's just be honest. But they bought him a birthday cake. Picture the scene. It's got one candle in, because let's be honest with you, anymore's a fire hazard these days, and we don't want to get set fire to restaurants. And he blew the candle out and he made a wish. And his wish came true. And I'm convinced the reason why Jack's not with us this week, he has combusted after Sebastian Loeb returned to win a rally. Sebastian Loeb's biggest fan is not with us this week. But this week, I will say on my right, hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony Simpson. And you know what? When we did the predictions last week, and he said to Jack Benyon, you're not going for Sebastian Loeb. Can you believe his hero won? And he didn't even tip him.
Can I actually say that in our text group that I actually went with Loeb in the middle of the rally? Can I point that out?
Well, that was in the middle of the rally.
All right, fine. And on my left, I'll say hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony Simpson. Hello, Ryan Champion. Hello, everybody else.
You didn't do predictions last week, Trevor Agnew. But if you would have done a prediction last week, honestly, hand on heart, who would it have been?
I did one on the text group. Oh, yeah, I said.
Yes, sorry, you did. At least you're honest. Mm. At least you're honest. Yeah. It's kind of weird because there's been on our little Twitter following and Facebook and stuff like that, people have been saying, can't wait to see what goes on the Absolute Rally podcast. Well, we're going to talk about it. Of course, we're going to break it down. We're going to talk about it and everything else. But before I go any further, right, we're going to do some correspondence, boys, if that's okay with you. If we can do a little bit of correspondence, because we do get emails in, and we've had loads of emails, by the way, for the competition. And we've actually now got some right answers. I'm not going to tell you who's got it. The ones who have got the correct answer for linking the names and what the link is to them, then well done you. You know who you are. Don't tell anybody. But please
I won't tell anybody.
Please keep sending your answers in. But we had an email in. You may remember, I think it was the same guy who emailed us from Australia a few months back now. I'm going to read it directly, and you can pick the bones out of this one. I'm not doing this as being a smart ass, as some may say, but it genuinely, this came in a couple of weeks ago, and I will say this. Subject: M Sport look like they finally have their drivers for 2019, which I even about a couple of weeks ago I thought was a big call to make, but I'll read it out. Being an Aussie fan, I can't wait to see a WRC at Coffs Harbour in November. No, it is a great, great venue. Fair play. I was delighted to hear that Hayden Padden and Craig Bean are going to M Sport. Again, not sure where you picked that up from, but okay. After OJ left, I thought it was all was lost. Elvin Evans and Timo Sunnen are their only drivers. Despite your bias towards Evans, again, I think we've addressed this, but being a Welsh pommy and all, you finally have to admit that he's had his go. Yes, he was quick on the roads around his house in Wales, but he can't compete at elite level on the same tyres as the rest of the field. He had some good results when he was on DMAC tyres when you give him an advantage. So it looks like the Kiwi, Irishman and Finn will get their chance in a consistent car for a full season. Padden will finally get to improve on tarmac. Now he will be entered on tarmac rallies. Evans will be competitive on an R5, which is the level he's at, and a WRC driver he is not. Padden, Breen and Sunnen are... I can't wait to hear what your thoughts are on this. Well, boys, where do we start?
You're only as good as your last result.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're only as good as your last result. I think that sums it up quite nicely. But if you want to go any further with Ryan Champion, you can.
No, that's fine.
I did mean to read that out last week, and genuinely, right, I'm not being a smart ass, and we love it when people do send us stuff in, and I seriously feel it's from Philip Mayers over in Australia. We're not having a go, but you have sent us a couple of emails. We're not biased, and to be fair, I think even Ryan said at the time, if we are biased, then so be it. But I don't think we are. I think we're equally fans of all the drivers. We'll go with Elvin's last result, and we'll go with what he's done for the team this year, and we'll go with what the team's done for him. And I don't think it's been a fair assessment. That's all I'll say to you, because the DMAC tyre historically only worked better than Michelin on Rally GB last year, and which is where, granted, Elvin got his result, but that's that was it, really. It's not, they have massive advantages anywhere else. I think it's fair to say if you speak to anybody about that. But still, there you go. Thanks for the email. Would you like some Gary Boyd information, boys, before we go any further?
Why not?
It seems odd not to, doesn't it? We've got to have Gary Boyd stuff. So, Gary Boyd, as ever, sends us in some interesting stuff. It stems back to what we've just had from the email, funnily enough. Silly season, Sebometer. Sebometer, I like that. M Sport lose one driver named Seb. Citroën resign one driver named Seb. Peugeot Rallycross free of one driver named Seb. Hyundai rumoured to be losing one co-driver named Seb. Toyota rumoured to be gaining one co-driver named Seb. Reality check. Sebometer. One Seb named Loeb beats another Seb named Ogier, who beats everybody else in the rain in Spain. See, it's becoming almost poetic now, Gary Boyd's facts, isn't it? It's not as much facts now. It's almost like a little poem. I like that, Gary.
Yeah, yeah.
You raise your game every time you send us something. Folks, Kiwi Rally fan, of course, you know where he lives on Twitter. He's always putting out loads of interesting bits and pieces. Right, let's get down to it. I'm just going to call it Rally Spain, just for the short answer. It was actually quite a big one. I know you were out doing TV coverage for an event at the weekend, but you were picking up bits and pieces. What did you take from the rally, other than the amazing journey that we were on with Sebastian Loeb? Were you able to kind of separate that out and still look at it from the title point of view, or were you a bit like me? Did you get into the fandom part of it, where, as I said last week, is it a little bit sad? You know, I'm more interested in what's going on with Petter and Seb Loeb and even Ken Block as well, of course. Did you kind of get into that, or were you very much focused on the title challenge?
No, a little bit of both. I mean, of course, we're all rally fans. Ultimately, that's why we're interested. And when you've got Sebastian Loeb, nine times world champion, he may be, but ultimately he's a driver that's been in semi-retirement for 6 years or so now. And when you've got Loeb fighting for a win, it's great. It causes excitement. We're all, like I said, we're all fans, and we all sort of dreamed of seeing that when he came back, but we didn't actually think we would. So, you know, you're certainly going to get sucked into it. That aside, I think one thing that stood out to me is, all things being equal, Oit Tanak would have won the last five rallies.
Are you going if, buts, whens and whys here, right? Come on, that's a dangerous game to play.
It isn't. In terms of next year's championship, I put my money on Oit Tanak now, because, yes, he didn't win the last two, but still, he had the pace too, and it's a shame for him, because obviously that's put him out of the championship race. But Toyota,
he's saying that he's not.
Well, he may say he's not, but ultimately he relies on the other two having problems, and one of them will get to the end, I'm sure. So
you heard it here first, folks. That's
I'm confident.
All Ryan champion, you're going to have a lot to answer for.
Confident one of those two, either Ogier or Onoville, will make it to the finish. But no, I'm just saying that it shows how competitive Toyota are, and while we'll get excited about the first Ogier versus Loeb battle we've really ever seen down to the last stage. And I think, to be honest, if going into the last stage, would we all have dared to think that Loeb would beat Ogier in a final stage battle? I'm not sure we would. But all things being equal, Toyota have still looked the fastest car on all the last five rallies, as I've said.
Trev, I guess the same point to you, but I want to come to you about something else as well after that. But were you all over the championship, or did you get involved in the nostalgia and the romance of having the names back that we had?
I just don't think you could have picked a better year to launch WRC All Live. It was just amazing, you know. And I had a bit of time over the weekend to watch it and catch up with it. So as a spectacle, it was fantastic. The leadership changing regularly. People up there like Danny Sordo, he was leading it. And then two or three stages later, he was fifth. It was just that movement, you know. And factor in, of course, the Volkswagen Polo in R5 and Petter back as well. It was just loads of stuff happening and lots of excitement around it. And you compare that to any other type of motorsport, you can see the attraction of rally.
I couldn't agree more. I want to talk to you about one man who was convinced he was going to win the rally at one point was Jari Matti Lahtfahler, and you know, you've got a feel for him on the gravel stage, where he did pick up that puncture, and I don't think I've ever seen Yari get as angry as that before. I've seen lots of different things from Yari. No comments, very philosophical, you know, upset and thing. I don't think I've ever seen anger like that.
It was the worst mood I've ever seen him. You're absolutely right. And of course you can see why. You think of the year he's had, you know, he's been struggling to be competitive against his teammate and he was literally going to blow him away. On that stage where he got the puncture on the gravel, he would have, I think the last split, he's 15 seconds up. And you can see, you know, he didn't want to hear about that. And I think that's probably what fired him into that rage of temper. But it's the usual thing with these guys. They just need to try and rein that in a little bit. The top sports people in the world, they don't show those swings of emotion. And there's a fair bit of that they certainly need help with, I think.
Do you know what, Trev? I'll say that. But that's just, you know, from a fandom point of view, we had the guys on. I was talking to the guys at Kielder today, and we were talking about this very subject, funnily enough, and this is before, obviously, we started recording the podcast. They watch it as fans, okay? I watch it as a fan, okay? We all work in rallying in various capacities and everything else. But if we can remove ourselves from our job and how we earn a living and we just look at it from a fan point of view, what they were saying, what Steve was saying from Kielder, he likes that. He likes the fact that he's seeing, you know, a non-sanitized stage end like that. Whereas, you know, in every other sport, you know, it would have gone through a PR person, or it would have gone through there. You know, it just wouldn't happen like that. So there's fans that actually do want to see that, Trev. Do you see the point?
Well, of course, it was great to see the emotion. That was part of why I was delighted to be able to be a stage end reporter. It's as close to competing as you're going to get. To have that raw emotion is fantastic. I'm talking about from a performance point of view, and that's basically what I get paid to do, is just to look at it and see, okay, if you focus on the top people in the world in their sports, they don't go through the extremes of emotion that you see on most stage ends. And I get what you're saying. You know, if I go down the pub and talk to people who've watched it versus, you know, the people who've been watching Formula One, they absolutely love it. You know, there's so many converts to rallying this year, and even people I'd never have thought of signed up for subscriptions to All Live. And they love it. They absolutely love it. You're right. And that's part of it.
Right. Speaking from watching the stage ends and stuff, as I say, I'd not seen Yari that angry. And, you know, is, you know, aside from what Trev's just said, and obviously that's Trev's forte and everything else, do you think that actually added a different aspect to Yari? Because he wrote off his opportunity of winning that rally, and then very quickly he retracted it a bit further on, because when the rain came for the tarmac stages, he was like, okay, here we go, it's another rally again. So he didn't, in effect, set the reset button.
Well, we saw the rally sort of bob up and down a little bit, didn't we, in terms of opportunities for a number of drivers. I mean, as we just talked about, it looked at one point like Tanak was going to win it. It looked like Sordo was going to win it. You know, it looked like Ogier might win it. It certainly looked like Latvala could win it, and ultimately Loeb won it. So it certainly was unpredictable. I think, yeah, I mean, Latvala was frustrated. He seems to have found his mojo again, for want of a better description. He seems to be on the pace. He's found his speed. We saw him fighting for a win on Wales Rally GB, and here he was again at the sharp end. So, you know, I guess that it's good to see a Latvala frustrated that he's, you know, that he has dropped time, because we just haven't seen him fighting right at the sharp end. So it is good to see, but I do take on board what Trev just said, that if that had been an Ogier or a Loeb, they'd have maybe just kept it a little bit more level-headed and thought, right, what can I do now?
Now, I just think, Tony, you know, and you've got to look at me, Ari Matty, on Sunday morning as well. You know, he had 14, 15 world title guys breathing down his neck, and he made a mistake again. It was a lapse in concentration that caused the second puncture. And, you know, those are the things that need to be addressed. And I just wonder how all those guys are thinking, all those nearly guys this year and over the last couple of years. It's been better this year. You've had three people at the front who have been at it, hammer and tongs the whole way through. And a guy gets into the car, hasn't driven on the wet in 6 years, and a miraculous tire choice in the last day, in the last 30 seconds of service, and he goes out and beats them off.
I do want to come to that. That was something I was saving for a little bit later on, to be honest with you. But as you've took us there, and as we twist and we wind, and we don't necessarily do things in chronological order, I wanted to make a big deal of this, and again, you guys have been at a far sharper end of the sport than what I have, right? Okay. Talking about what Seb did, Seb made a last minute choice, as you just mentioned there, Trev, with regards to going on the hard tyre, which was brave. Everyone else, I think, went out on softs. I think Tanak went out on a mix of tyres. I don't know whether that was down to the fact of his tyre allocation or whether he genuinely went out on that was his plan anyway. But to make that decision comes, at first glance, people were called brave. But then you start to look at experience. And where does experience outweigh brave on that particular decision, Trev?
Experience, definitely. You know, many times he won the rally. Was that his ninth? It certainly is yet to ninth
time. Yeah, ninth time.
Yeah. And he's been on hard tires before in that situation. He's tested the hard tires. He knew the hard tires. And his experience, it was a gut feeling at the end. That's what he said on the TV. It was just a gut feeling last minute. He had agreed to go on softs, and last minute he said, hards. And they changed them over, and it was an inspired choice. And those are the things that he regularly got right. If you look back at his career, he regularly got right. Whether whoever his crews were, and you talk about people going in and helping him out, his information, especially in Monte Carlo, was always absolutely spot on, and his tire choice was incredible, and he's done it again. And he won that rally, apart from the consistency in the first 2 days, but that tire choice in the last day.
Right. Do you think that perhaps the current crop of drivers, dare I say, even though they've now been around the block, you know, compared to most for quite some time, they perhaps would always go with the option that everybody else, you know, everybody always kind of looks what everybody else is going on. Okay, you can stick a bit of, you know, black tape over the tire code, but you know, on the whole, most people do tend to go on the same as what others are going. You know, to go outside of that mindset seems to be such a huge jump for so many people. Do you just think that the current crop always stays safe as opposed to being that bold almost?
Good question. I think there's a couple of things at play. I think when you've got somebody like Loeb, as Trevor just said, he's got so much experience to fall back on and so much confidence in himself, despite the fact, what I quite like about Sebastian Loeb is he's never outwardly cocky or arrogant or anything like that. You know, before a rally, he always was, even when he was winning every rally, he always said, well, I'm not sure if we can win this one, and you know, we haven't been here before with this car or whatever, and then come the first stage, he'd always blow everybody away. But there's always this humility around him, but nonetheless, he's got this self-belief that he's doing the right thing. And you're quite right in what you said. Maybe a lot of the other drivers aren't as level-headed, and therefore they need some guidance, they need some reassurance, and therefore generally if you do this by committee you'll take the safe option. And he didn't, as Trev just said, he probably didn't even think that was a brave choice. He just thought, no, I can see why that's the correct choice. And again, I think if you talk about the current crop, how many of the current crop of drivers would you say are level-headed? And the ones that are the ones that tend to be successful on a regular basis. The ones that are more inconsistent, we probably see that in their character as well.
All right.
Let's jump in there, if you don't mind, Tony. Just
go on, Trev.
There's a big difference between being assertive and being aggressive, and that's, I think, what Brian was talking about there. The other thing, to be fair to the Toyota drivers on Saturday morning, they went with the wet choice and nobody else did. So they were sticking their neck out a little bit on that one. And it worked for them. It worked really, really well. Certainly for Latvala and Tanak, if he had got to the end of the first one, it would have been a good choice for him, I think, as well, when he didn't get the puncture. But would he have got the puncture if he was on an intermediate tire? I don't know.
Right. Just for, and again, Trev, I'll get your feedback on this as well. Just for our listeners, our listeners are you know, both compete and don't. Just for the uninitiated, just explain perhaps the difference between a soft and a hard tire at that point. How would it feel? What's the difference?
Well, it was ultimately, it was quite damp, wasn't it, still? Or certainly to begin with. And you've got to get the hard tire up to temperature. So you know, there's no two ways about it. In those conditions, the soft tyre probably came in a lot quicker and probably felt better initially, whereas a hard tyre inherently takes longer to warm up. But what you get with a hard tyre is the stability. And as long as you can get that hard tyre into its operating range, it will stay much more stable over a longer period. It was something that particularly with when I was driving with Mitsubishi with bigger, heavier cars, particularly the Group N cars, they used to move around a lot. And if you could get the heavy tyre into its operating range, the hard tyre into its operating range, then that was the one to be on, because it just lasts and it just be so much more consistent over over a long loop. But if it's damp, you would think, well, maybe I wouldn't go with a hard tyre. If it looks like it might rain again, well, I probably wouldn't go with a hard tyre. If there's any changeable conditions, it just relies on that conviction to do it and to be able to make it work.
Do you know, while I was watching this, and I did watch this segment on WRC Live, I did dip in and out of it, just trying to watch it all in one hit. It's tantamount to possibly losing your house, your partner and your child all in one weekend. So you've got to be careful how much time you commit to WRC Live. But I did dip in, and I dipped in at the point where Loeb made this choice. And I found it interesting because it harked back to a period for me. And I know we mentioned earlier when we had about the email that we had, and of course about, you know, DMAC, we're in for a period of time, obviously supporting Elvin's program last year and obviously they're still active around WRC2 and stuff like that. But it did take me back to a period where I wanted another mainline tyre manufacturer. I wanted Pirelli in there, for instance. I want, you know, the tyre wars battle for me was something that was always really, really special as well, right? Because we had tyre experts and, you know, we had people working on getting a tyre, working on a specific car as well and things like that. I think it added something to it. And I still think the knowledge of tyres now with pretty much a single supplier, it has to be said, it's kind of lost something. And to be fair, Loeb making that choice almost took me back to the days of the tyre wars, because he went something completely left field to everyone else.
Well, yeah, I'd go further than that. It wasn't just that we had more tyre manufacturers in there, but we also had more tyre choices. You know, if you go back to Monte Carlos of like the early 90s even, then you had everything from, well, where do we start? You had 15-inch snow tyres, be it studded or unstudded. They could be narrow, they could be wide. You had a 15-inch ice tyre. Then you went to 18-inch tyres, and again, you'd have a winter or you'd have a stud. Then you'd have a thermal compound slick that would operate in maybe, you know, from minus 10 up over. You'd then have a whatever it was, soft compound, medium compound, hard compound slick. But then over and above that, you'd have half stud, you'd have different lengths of stud, different number of studs. So, you know, at one point there was hundreds and hundreds of tyres per team and dozens of tyre choices. Now, you can understand why it was rationalised from that. And right down to where we are now with one tyre manufacturer and a very limited number of choices, really, a soft hard or the, you know, the monsoon tyre. You're right, it has lost something, because it's lost the element of surprise that somebody could take something completely different. And as we referred to earlier on in the show, you know, even when we had DMAC last year, occasionally DMAC brought this fantastic tyre to a rally that was actually better than the Michelin, and it really did spice the sport up. But, you know, that's how it is. That's where we're at. We often had more unpredictables. We mentioned on last week's show about the tarmac experts that used to come in for one rally, or the snow expert, or whatever it may be. So things have changed. And everything's much more optimised now, isn't it? Ultimately, the cars are much more optimised, the tyres are more optimised, the drivers are more optimised. You know, every corner is 100% and no less, or else you're dropping time. So we've certainly seen a big change over the last few years. But I do think you're right. When there was a tyre war there, there was an element of unpredictability.
Trev, do you miss it? you miss it. You don't have to go as in-depth as Ryan Champion. Jesus, I didn't know where he was going with that. But I think, you know what, it was more information than my little mind could handle. But it did, you know, all competition is good. And it did definitely add something to it, didn't it?
Yeah, it's so important. David Lapworth would always told you, like, as a generic, I suppose, view of everything, the car is 50%, the driver's 50%, and the tire's 25%. Sorry, car 50%.
He wasn't good at maths, was he, Dave Lapworth?
Driver 25%, and tire 20%. I mean, we're talking about the optimum, just at the last bit. That's where it was down to. And of course, on certain rallies, you know, Pirellis were better than Michelin. Certainly the thermal quality of a Pirelli in Monte Carlo during my era was always better than a Michelin at that particular point in time. Yeah, there is. The extreme, of course, is DMAC last year, competitive in one rally, definitely, and maybe another one. But the rest of the year, not so competitive. But when Pirelli and Michelin went head-to-head, there were certainly... it added a new dimension to it. But, you know, the flip side of that is if everybody's on the same manufacturer. But in saying that, you know, you were talking earlier about everybody.
So you could put everyone in the same car then, couldn't you? If you want to if you want to lose that element, you might as well just put everyone in the same car.
Well, put them in the same car, put them in the same amount of tyres, put them five, you know, maximum five. So there's plenty of alternatives, plenty of choices. If you look at the tyre choices over the rallies this year, some people going on five, some people going on six, some people going on mix of thread, of course. There's an allocation that controls all of that. So I think we're done tyres.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'd say one thing that, do you know what, I watched WRC Live, the catch-up as well with regards to the swap-over, and a friend of the show, Rich Milner, was taking the cameraman through what was going on during that service, right, where they switch everything over. Is it as mind-blowing as what you would think it is, or is it the fact that they're just completely and utterly just stripping a car and pretty much rebuild it into a tarmac car in the 70-minute service?
I think ultimately the mechanics enjoy their moment in the sun, if you like, now, don't they? They used to pretty much have to do that at a roadside at one point, you know, particularly in the old days of maybe something like San Remo, when you went down from San Remo down to Tuscany, and they wouldn't have the conditions that they have now. So I think the mechanics really thrive on getting to do that now. It's again, we've talked about how rallying's evolved, and there's just these very short periods of activity in the service park. But the mechanics are so well drilled now, you know, they know how to pretty much fully rebuild a car in that time, and it's great to see it. But in some ways, it's much more organised now than it would have been when you're pulling in at a roadside, you know, just up a farm track and having to do it in the dark or whatever it might be. But you know, the mechanics are no less skilled now than ever. They're still brilliant at what they do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, folks, before we carry on with this, we're going to go to a little break where we're going to be playing some stings with regards to obviously trying to name the six names and the link together, and we're also on the other stings that we're doing as well for the headbands. If you've not got involved in that yet, seek it out. We've shared it on our Facebook page, also on Twitter. While I'm thinking about headbanders, and Ryan's just reminded me of something, by the way, Gearbox the movie. Right, if anyone has got Gearbox the movie that they could send us a copy of, could you please drop us a message to studio@absoluterally.co.uk if you could do that for us? There's a reason. If you could do that for us, that'd be great. But anyway, folks, sit back, relax, try and figure out what the names are, and we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. They say you don't know where you're going until you know where you've been. And in rallying, we love to reminisce. The cars, the legends, the style. And we're on a campaign to bring back service team headbands. Become a headbander. Find us on Twitter and Facebook to get involved. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We were just talking there, obviously, about the swap overs and changing the cars over. Trev, did you ever have to get your hands dirty in service and get involved and try and get a car swapped over from gravel to tarmac? Did you ever do events that involved anything like that?
No, I don't remember being involved in that. They're doing the British Championship as well. Didn't until recently, the Nicky Grist rally had to swap over.
We did it. That was 2016. That's when we did it. We did gravel on the Saturday and tarmac on the Sunday. Funny enough, we were talking about that before we started recording this podcast.
My first World Rally was 1997 in San Remo. Ran was talking about before. The year before was when they went to, they were in Tuscany and moved up to San Remo, so they had to swap over then. But no, I can't remember anything as major as that.
No, okay, there you go. Boys, believe it or not, we're nearly halfway through the podcast and we haven't even kind of started talking about the other stories that kind of went on and some of the other drivers, really. Trev, you mentioned Danny Sordo before. Danny, I was left a little bit lost because Danny's had a cracking season. We thought this was going to be a rally, especially when he went into the lead of the rally. I thought, yippee-yi-yay, here we go. This is going to be Danny's event now. And he just kind of seems to slip backwards and kind of almost into obscurity by the end of Sunday.
Combination of him slipping back. He was leading at lunchtime Saturday, if I remember right. And then in the afternoon is when he went from first to fifth. At one point, he was losing a second a kilometre, so he just couldn't get the car dialed in for that bit. And it's strange to see that happen. You say he's had a good year, but I think if this year, if you look back, Monte Carlo certainly was on the podium, and he sputtered off in the last day. I think that was this year. And another event where the same thing happened. But consistency as a team player is always he's there. And he's destined to do the same again next year, from what I can gather. He's there for another six or seven rallies, and that's perfect for him. But all the time, he must have been cursing load back again. We've seen that earlier on in the year, where he was having that hassle in Corsica, where they're breathing down his neck again. And that's been a situation that he was used to quite a few years ago.
Shared programme with Danny at High and Die next year then for Sebastian Loeb. What do you think, Crash?
I can't see Sebastian Loeb driving. No, I was going to say, but I mean, I guess we're moving on and moving sideways a little bit, but we've seen the rumours circulating of Loeb that, you know, that M Sport are after him, that Malcolm's talking to him, and I'm sure he is, but ultimately, you know, Sebastian Loeb has been a PSA driver for virtually his whole career. He's still paid by the Peugeot Citroen. He probably has an ongoing contract of some sort there as an ambassador for as long as he wants. Yes, he's going back to Dakar as a privateer next year, but I'm sure there's plenty of help from Peugeot Sport with their existing, you know, Dakar tackle and infrastructure that they've got. If he wanted to do World Rallycross next year as a privateer, I'm sure he'll get a car from Peugeot Sport. I just can't see him jumping ship from that backing, quite honestly. And if he drives anything in WRC next year, I can only think it will be a Citroen.
Do you know what? I agree with you. And I think what happened at the weekend, I think there almost could be, right, pick events, what events you want to do next year. You want to run the World Rallycross program out of Sebastian Loeb Racing, as being suggested. I'll tell you what, we'll give you the cars. You run them on, you run them on our behalf. You pick the events. This is your, you know, you continue with your salary, everything else. Are you happy with that? Yeah, fine. There you go. Job done. And I think it could almost be that simple, that deal. I really do.
Yeah, and ultimately, I don't think he wants any more, does he? He still wants something that challenges him, but he said he wants, you know, his whole reason for retiring from the World Rally Championship in the first place was to have more time himself, to spend more time at home and to choose what he wants to do. And reading between the lines, I don't think any of that's changed. So, yes, may whet his hunger to whet his appetite rather to do more rallies next year, but it'll be more rallies on his terms when he chooses.
Trev, do we dare dream outside of, obviously we've just gone through the logical facts of why this probably wouldn't happen, but do we dare dream outside of that?
Yeah, he won't do a full programme, as obviously he's always said that. It's interesting, Linda Jackson, the CEO of Citroen, was on the rally and she was interviewed on All Live. And her view really is it's down to sale, whatever he wants, we'll try and accommodate it. And, of course, if that's the situation, then he calls what he wants to do his cross-country. He definitely won't go to rallycross in a private team. What's the point? He's stayed for another year after the Peugeot factory involvement to try and get the car more competitive. It's whatever Citroën can afford, I suppose, at the end of the day. But whoever said once, he'll go to Citroën, or Citroën will say, okay, we either can or can't do it. And if they can't do it, I doubt M Sport will be able to do it. But that's clearly you've got to talk to the man.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. But I think all the facts that I think we've just presented will mean he will be in red, which makes me think, dare I say this, obviously there's been previous Ryan Champion between the two Sebs before, perhaps when and the younger was in the ascendancy and the other was at the lofty heights that Junior is now at, I suppose. Do you think Seb Ogier just thinking, right, I'm going back to Citroën now, my spiritual home to some degree, it's going to be my team, I'll snap my authority, I'll win another manufacturer, you know, win with another manufacturer, et cetera, et cetera. And then Sebastian Loeb comes back and wins Rally Spain and says, you know what, I fancy rallying again.
Yes, but as we've just said, Sebastian Loeb isn't going to do a full programme. Ogier will be the number one driver. He will make the team his. And if Sebastian Loeb wants to come along and do a rally, then great. But, you know, he probably won't have quite the free rein that he's had this year in his limited programme. You know, ultimately, if Ogier needs the points this time next year on Rally Spain, I would imagine there'd be an awful lot of pressure on Sebastian Loeb to do the correct thing at that point. So this year's worked quite well because there's been no Citroën Championship battle. So, you know, Loeb was free to do what he wanted. I have a feeling next year it might be a bit different. And with Loeb already committing to Dakar, we're unlikely to, I don't know if it's even possible, but I think it's virtually impossible, therefore, to see him in Monte Carlo. So that's maybe the one time where a championship battle won't come into it. And by the time we do see Loeb doing anything, you know, Ogier will probably be in his championship stride. So, I'm not saying it'll clip Loeb's wings. He may be left to go for the victory, but I think it'll be slightly different to what we see this year.
Okay, no, that makes sense. Teammates has been such a big part of this year, hasn't it? And I think, you know, we started the program talking about Elvin, and obviously the email we had in and everything else. You know, all joking aside, but Elvin has to be teammate of the year this year, Trev, for me. Because even what he did at the weekend, because I don't know whether the call came through from the team. I'm not privy to that information, whether just going into that last stage where basically they went, look, you're off the leash, just go and do it. You know, whatever will be, but you've got to push. Or he basically just went about his business. And obviously Thierry Neuville picked up that knock. He took that cut. Apparently he caught a rock that Elvin had pulled out supposedly. And that was that, or whether he was told to push to go and try and get that podium in order to take more points away from Thierry Neuville.
Yeah, of course he was. Malcolm mentioned, I think it was Bex was interviewing him on All Live, and he said, do you want to see the text? And he didn't in the end, but it was clear. He was told, go for it. You've got to take these points. And he did, and he did a good job. And I don't believe Neuville, fair enough, he did take a cut. He took a couple of big cuts, and that's where he damaged the wheel. I don't know if it was a rock knocked out by Elvin particularly, but it was a cut that the car or the tyre wasn't able to make. But Elvin did a sterling job. You know, he could easily have made a mistake and he didn't. So, again, going back to what you said, if you look at the three or four rallies this year where he's contributed big style, and that's got to be worth a lot of value going into 2019. I think he's certainly done himself no harm there, but has the decision been made or not? I think it's still up in the air, so he's in with a good shout, I think, for 2019 still, Elvin.
I think so. I think looking at team, and the reason why I mentioned teammates, of course, is that, you know, Elvin's kind of done that. You know, I suppose Danny, if he would have stuck where he was and, you know, perhaps kept at the forefront, and Thierry would have, you know, maybe done the honours for Thierry a bit further down the line, who knows. But this is now where Thierry hasn't really been as backed up as perhaps as what he would have wanted to be now, right? I think looking it around him, obviously Tanak's had some really strong support from his teammates. Obviously, Sebastian Ogier has only really had Elvin, but he's backed him up on and off stage. But the Hyundai 3 hasn't really worked. And I just wonder whether, come the end of the year, that could ultimately be the undoing of Thierry's title.
You're quite right, and the Hyundai management must scratch their heads a little bit on that, because they've got four capable drivers. They've got, you know, Thierry has singled himself out as the team leader, because he is the one who week in, week out is performing. The shared car, well, we know about, you know, in theory, they, between Hayden Padden and Danny Sordo, you know, the rallies were chosen to play to their strengths, and they've both gone quite well this year at times. I mean, as Trev said, it hasn't been perfect, but Sordo generally has looked competitive. You know, Hayden's had a couple of good rallies. And then Andreas Mikkelsen. I mean, what has happened to Andreas Mikkelsen? He set a couple of good times again during this rally. We've seen flashes of it, but then the rest of the rally, he just didn't know whether he was coming or going. And, you know, it's not that long ago that we had Citroën and Hyundai fighting over Andreas Mikkelsen. He was the brightest talent that was unsigned, and now he just... he's just at a loss, and it's hard to understand why. It's hard to understand why such a fast, talented driver as Mikkelsen that we saw winning rallies for Volkswagen can be as far away as he currently is on a consistent basis. So, to go back to your point, Thierry would have hoped to have had great support from his team. I mean, ultimately, Danny was only, 1.6 seconds, I think, behind him. So it was nothing. But it just hasn't worked for the Hyundai team this year.
Trev, what's your kind of take on that with regard to teammates and stuff like that? Andreas is a great example of somebody that probably needs somebody like yourself around, or your Norwegian equivalent, dare I say. I'm not even going to attempt to try and say Trevor Agnew in Norwegian, but I'm sure it's just Trevor Agnew, come to think of it, but still, I'm going very Partridge there. I'll stay away from that. But Andreas, there's definitely something just not happening, and we've said this before, and is this just a case of a man wanting to get to the end of the season and hitting that big master reset button and going again next year?
He couldn't be going to a better rally in Australia. The car won there last year in the hands of Jerry Neville. Andreas won the rally the year before in the Polo. He's lost at sea at the minute. It's that simple. He can't get the car to do what he wants. He doesn't get it feeling. The balance isn't there. So reset before he goes to Australia. He's got good road position for the first day. Show them what we all know he can do. And he'd be sorted for next year. It'd be a great way to end the year. He could potentially win Australia if he goes on his decent run on the first day.
Can I just put this out there? And I'll go to you first, Ryan, and we'll come to Trev. We've had this over the years, though, where very, very good drivers have just not clicked with a car, and they've got in another car, and it's all come back again, haven't we?
Yeah, of course we have. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But it's also something that we've been talking about for the last 18 months or so with this new generation of car. They do seem a little bit tricky in terms of their setup window. They've got a relatively small setup window. You know, we even saw Ogier struggling last year to make the Fiesta work for him, which ultimately seems to be better for him this year. Thierry Neville was inconsistent last year, and he's had elements of inconsistency this year, but for various reasons. But we've seen a lot of the current generation of drivers struggle with the current generation of cars, and none more so than Andreas Mikkelsen. And like you said, yeah, it may well be there's something fundamental in the Hyundai that just isn't giving him the confidence that he needs. And ultimately, like we said, driving.
What's the difference then, Ray? So Loeb had the same issues both mornings, Friday and Saturday morning. Couldn't get the car to do it once, couldn't get the balance right, couldn't get the theme right. In the afternoon, he sorted it. Was he driving around it? Was he making adjustments at service? What was he doing then? It's just, for me, the whole Loeb thing blows out of the water. All the video cameras, all the watching of it, seat time argument.
Lightweight car drivers.
All of that's blown out of the water, boys. I'm sorry.
Trev? Sorry. Right, let's just pause. Let's just pause you for a second, if I can do that. Yes, while you're right, it goes out the window when we're talking about one individual that is clearly unique. To the masses, it applies. Sorry.
Yes, but I think what Trev's saying is, if you have this inner belief and this inner confidence, if you can find that, then maybe you don't need it. But I think that's the difference. You know, Mikkelsen just can't seem to find the and it's all about this feeling now, isn't it? God, how many times have we mentioned that, particularly with Jari Matti, this feeling. And that ultimately, that's because the rallies are so close. I mean, we sort of forget the rally at the weekend was decided by 2.9 seconds. What was it? The top five were separated by 18.6 seconds. 18.6 seconds in rallying terms, like for years and years, that was absolutely nothing. Yet now, if you're 18.6 seconds behind going into the last day, well, all things being equal, you're not going to win. Whereas, you know, for probably the last, whatever, probably bar the last 2 or 3 years, you know, you would have had a chance of making it up on the last day. Everything is so optimized now with the cars and the drivers that if they can't get comfortable, they're miles away. But yes, as Trev's just said, you bring somebody back like Loeb, who has this inner confidence, this innate ability to just get the car to the end of the stage in as fast a time as possible, and he can get around these problems that seemingly others can't.
Sorry, Trev, I did pause you then. If you want me to press play, I'll press play now.
No, that's the point. The other guys need to understand, they need to find this ability to be able to drive around some of these problems, I think.
Just drive the car.
Yeah.
Stop playing about with it. Just drive the car.
Do you think there's too many changes that can be made now?
No, I think back to the same thing. We're with an active differential years ago. And as I said to you before, and I had this conversation with people, and McRae used to, he had a spool diff in the back of the car and locked the centre diff and drove, you know, just had adjustment in the front. So you can get round all those things if, I don't know. What do you think, Ray?
Well, it's funny because I was talking to Martin Wilkinson not long ago about this. Martin, he was on the podcast a couple of years ago, runs CA1 Sport and a lot of young drivers. And he says to his younger drivers in the R5 car, stop playing about with it. That setup on the car works, just drive it. But I think we see it, don't we? We see it because we've got all live and we see into everything now. If a driver doesn't set a time, there's a reason for it. They feel they have to change the car. They have to change something. And often they don't maybe look at themselves, I guess. I mean, Trevor, you know that better than me. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Say that again, Trev. Sorry, I missed that.
It's never their fault. It's never a driver issue that they're going slow. If you listen to the, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think you're right. They, you know, all the current drivers try, or not all the current drivers, that's a sweeping statement. Some of the current drivers will try and make a change to the car because they think that's the reason they're not going fast enough. And sure, there's always a time when you can make the car can inspire more confidence. But ultimately, these teams and these cars and these tyres have had millions spent on them, so it shouldn't be far away.
Okay, so are we now in the realms of drivers that don't understand perhaps what changes make changes that they want?
Well, it shouldn't be, because they all spend a lot of time testing these cars. It's, you know, we've got very few top line drivers who aren't testing the cars regularly, so they all get more than enough time to test, and again therein lies the other issue, that they all test and then they come to the rally, oh well, the test road wasn't relevant, oh well, we've got different conditions to the test, I'm gonna have to change the setup from the test. Well, what was the point in the test then?
Okay.
I mean, the usual thing with tests, as we've talked about before, you've got three or four pieces of road that are no more than 5 kilometres long, and you go to a rally, you know, the first proper stage halfway through, the conditions will have changed compared to the test. But the other thing that's being bandied about at the weekend on social media is, of course, Loeb could be quick in that car, is the winning car from last year. But I don't think it is. If you think of the revisions in that car, suspension-wise, and what they modified since last year, it can't have been the same car unless they reverted back to what they ran last year in Catalonia. And, of course, the other thing is the teams around them have developed the car, and we know the Toyota is stronger. So it's not just about the car all the time.
Okay. If let's play fantasy WRC, as ever that we like to do. If Loeb was still fighting for it, if Loeb was in the title fight, would he have won that rally?
Yes.
Yes, I think he would, because he would have still had the same clear thought process that he had, and he'd have still made the same tyre decision.
Okay.
He doesn't get distracted. He doesn't lose concentration. He focuses on the driving. He focuses on all the input He needs to make the decisions, the multiple decisions per second he needs to make to drive the car. He's able to put all the other stuff out of his mind. He always has done. And that's the difference.
While we're at Citroën, boys, I want to touch on Craig Breen's weekend. It potentially could have been so strong, but he ran up fifth on Friday, and then obviously when we got to the tarmac, we lost the rear wing. I think it was once or twice he lost the rear wing. By all accounts, he didn't have a great deal of time in the car leading up to it on tarmac. I think it was only a couple of hours or something like that he got on tarmac. Is that possibility of Craig not being at Citroën next year, do we think, Trev?
No, I don't think so. I'll be harsh if it's that. And on one rally, there's two lapses of concentration, really, is a big thing. Those two spins that cost him a decent performance on it. And that can happen. You know, the pressure's on. And when that happens, you do lose concentration. But that's everybody, isn't it? That's everybody this year, including the top three. They've lost concentration at certain points of the year. And that's what you have to minimise. You've got to get that cut out.
Right, where do you see Craig next year? Do you see perhaps a shared car with Sebastian Loeb still at Citroën, or do you see him moving on?
Well, I'm sure Craig is desperate to get a full programme. He needs a full programme, doesn't he? He's got experience of the WRC now. He's got experience of the rallies. He now needs a full season to really show what he can do. So I think, well, there's no two ways about it, is that if he's at Citroën, it's going to be a part program. If he wants a full program, he's going to have to move. And the only place he can move to is M Sport. So I'm sure, given the choice, he would go for a full program at M Sport. He needs a full program. He needs to do all the rallies and be out there regularly. But let's see if that happens.
I'm pretty certain he said, whether it was before GB, he would have a full program for next year somewhere. So,
well then, it can only be driving for one team.
Yeah, well, that's the way the cards are starting to fall now, aren't they? But
I don't remember him saying he had a full program. He certainly said he had a program for next year.
But
either that, if he was there, if there was half the year with Loeb driving the other half of the rallies and Khalid coming in doing the odd one, I don't think it's a good idea to have two Sebs in a French team and Craig being the third driver effectively, or sharing one of the cars. A move to M Sport might be the fresh start that he needs.
Yeah, and just the other thing on that as well. I mean, I think even when he found out Loeb was going to do Catalonia, I'm trying to remember now, because I did the interview with Craig at the Rally Forum before Rally GB, but it's that long ago, I've slept since then. But I remember him saying about the frustration that Loeb was going to do the rally, because he knew as soon as he heard that was his testing out the window. He needs the time to be able to concentrate on his own program. I remember him saying that, because he said just to get his frustration out of his system, he put a full drum of fuel in the recently acquired Metro 6R4 and ragged it around the lanes until he ran out.
I remember that. But also, cast your mind back, of course, to Sweden as well, where he finished second. The next rally had to miss because Loeb was there in Mexico, and that wasn't a good time for him either.
No, not at all.
No, you're right. He lost a lot of momentum at that time. That's right.
Yeah. He massively lost momentum, I thought. Massively. But another guy who's obviously heading over to join the Citroën folders is Lappi, who possibly had the biggest skid. And I'm not just talking about on the road. I'm talking about on his race underwear of the weekend. And I only seen the outside version of this earlier today. I'd not seen it. And I'd seen the onboards because I was watching all live at the time. And it didn't quite do it justice, the onboard. But wow, because that was, I don't know whether you see it, whether you were watching this, guys, but leading up to it, it was clearly to me the Toyota's the fastest in a straight line, because they had the speedo on and I think it was flickering 193 kilometers an hour, something like that. And the Fiesta seems to be around 191 or something like that, because I was watching that, because it was all flat, 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 and it was a little bit drizzly and everything else. And it's that type of onboard where you're watching, you go, I wouldn't want to be anywhere slightly offline at this point. And then he had that spin and you're waiting for the big, big bang. You're waiting for the big you know, crumpled noise and everything else. And that has to be the getaway of the season. I don't know whether you've seen it yet, right? But I've seen it both in and out the car now, and it's definitely for me the getaway of the season.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the car actually, but I have seen it from outside a couple of times, and it was one of those that, you know, he took a cut, didn't he? And then the back of the car went wide and it started to spin, but it wasn't going slow enough that he could spin it in the road and not hit anything. So he just went down the road sideways for a long, long time, and then just dropped off to the right hand side. But yeah, like you said, it's one of those, if you spin it, you can. But he was carrying so much speed. But I think, and actually some of the footage I've seen, some of the YouTube footage and some of the video clips I've seen from amateur footage, if you like, since the rally, really highlight the speed that these cars are carrying through the cuts. You know, they're taking massive cuts, really bouncing the car off the road. And if that goes right for you, you can carry a considerable amount of extra speed through the corner. But if it spits you off, or you just run wide and you get on the marbles, then you know, then a spin is the very best outcome. So I think, you know, these cars are so fast, but they're extracting every single thing they can from the road. And if that goes right, great. But if it doesn't, you're in the lap of the gods.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team, paying homage to heroes and legends of years gone by.
Spot on.
Dear God.
Have you had any problems with your car?
Not really. Only between seat and driving wheel. That's all.
I can go. No, but I know I can. But if you allow me.
Best in the world.
But of course, Kielder continue to push forward with the latest technology, producing cordless tools for the world of motorsport. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Boys, before we get to, we need to talk WRC2 and a few other bits and pieces before we get to that. We now find ourselves in a situation that it's advantage Sebastian Ogier going into the final round. We've got a 3-point difference, Ryan Champion. Where does a man from your part, your neck of the woods, who doesn't throw his cash round as freely as most, where does he put his 50 pence?
Oh, I think we sound like a stuck record at this point, but it's Sebastian Ogier from experience. He's been there before, as in been in that position before. He's won from first on the road there before, so he knows he can. I don't think either of them will win in Australia, been, you know, taking their road positions into account. Yes, Thierry's got a slightly better road position, but it is only slightly better. So, you know, I think we're going to see a big battle, and Thierry Neuville was very fast at the weekend at times, but you know, you'd be gambling if you put your money anywhere other than Sebastian Ogier.
Trevor Agnew?
Yeah, sticking with him. I've been with him for 2 or 3 months now. What I would say, I take Ryan's point. It's a different scenario now, but he has won the rally from running first on the road on more than one occasion and running first on the road for 2 days. So it's possible that he can win it under the pressure. Nobody's gone into the rally, I guess, before and had that pressure between actually two of them. As before, Tanak has an outside chance we talked about, but yeah, Ogier definitely.
Okay, I'm gonna go the same as you two, but for the reason because I want you know, looking at the manufacturers now. It could be tough for M Sport to come through, and I think M Sport needs all the help they can get. So if they can have the world champion, albeit departing, they've still supplied the world champion his car for 2018. And for those guys who work so hard, and I don't think people really truly understand how hard they actually work to keep it going, compared to the other big teams, if you like, I think for those guys, I think they need it and I think they deserve it. So I'm going to go M Sport / Ogier as opposed to Ogier / M Sport, if that makes sense. And that's nothing against Sebastian Ogier. I just think the guys need it. But still, there you go. WRC2, we had another returning hero, gentlemen. We had the Solberg clan, which I still believe should be a documentary, by the way. I still think that would be great to have a Flying the World documentary following around Henning and Petter. Yeah, we had the Polo R5s, Ryan Champion, who, they looked the business, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, they did, but I don't think we expected anything else. You know, they've been testing the car for 2 years, but still, it showed just what a brilliant package the current Skoda Fabia is, because, you know, the two Skoda drivers in Robin Perra and Capecchi were never far behind Camilli, and ultimately when Camilli had problems, it was a Skoda 1-2. But yeah, absolutely, the Polo looked great. It looked fast, but I think we'd expect that, you know, just from the amount of time and effort that's gone into it from a world championship winning team. It will win rounds of WRC2 in the future, and it'll probably win the championship, because ultimately it's only going to get better with on rally development, and I think the new version of the Fabia will be closely based on it. So one way or another, the Volkswagen group are very strong in WRC2.
It will be really interesting, Trev, that WRC2 is going to effectively be there's going to be like a two-tier championship next year, and it will be interesting to see what the teams go with. Obviously, Volkswagen are saying they're not going to be a manufacturer entry, but whether it'll be importers that will take the Volkswagen brand and do it that way, I really, really don't know. But WRC2 is meant to be getting a shot in the arm also from a coverage point of view next year.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's going to be a cracking championship, because there are going to be a minimum six polos out there, I would have thought, in WRC2 next year. You'd expect them to be in the manufacturer Pro, WRC2 Pro, I think we're going to call it, aren't they? Something along those lines I've read anyway. But yeah, it's going to add a big impetus. You've got Citroën when they get all the niggles ironed out of their R5 car as well. It's going to be competitive. It's going to be good. And the Fiesta, of course, is also up there.
Well, there'd be a new Fiesta as well by that point as well, because obviously they were still running the older generation R5 Fiesta. The new one is coming, and you know, it'd be interesting to see who ends up in that, because obviously I think M Sport will be keen to run WRC2 Pro. I think it will be interesting to see where Gus Greensmith ends up. He was on the podcast the other week. You know, his announcement where he is for next year. There's strong rumours that I know he tested the world car a couple of weeks ago down at Greystoke, or up at Greystoke from where I'm sat at the moment, and whether that was enough to entice him to stay with M Sport, I guess we'll find out over the next few weeks. And when he makes a decision, of course, folks, you'll know, and then we'll talk about it, because these days you don't break news like that. It all comes out on social media anyway. Right, so just a quick roundup as well. Well done to a friend of the show, young Tom Williams, of course, who had an epic event running an M Sport R2 car. We were getting the updates from him as well, and again, all adding to his education for his career moving forward. But still, boys, we're at that point of any other business, believe it or not. We're an hour in. We've done loads of main field WRC. I think we've done more than enough. We've had no guests this week. Those who are expecting guests this week, sorry, just thought the rally kind of dictated the podcast to itself. I'm sure you'll agree. But boys, you got anything else before we get to any other business?
Yeah. Oh, no. Any other business?
You've got your any other business. Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Ryan Champion, have you got anything else before we go any other business?
No, just other than to say we mentioned the Volkswagen Polo R5. We should probably just tip our hats to Petter Solberg, who obviously was making his comeback in the World Rally Championship, and, you know, and putting a good performance, took third in WRC2, and realistically that was probably the best he could have hoped for. It would have been a big ask to expect him to come back and compete at this level and really fight for a win in WRC2.
Okay, just on that, do you see him back out doing more events?
Yeah, probably. I'm sure he enjoyed it, enjoyed the experience, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in a Polo on more rallies.
I'm going to say one thing here, and this, I've got no insider information. This is completely and utterly, this is just Tony Simpson as an individual, just looking at the world at large at the moment in motorsport and everything else. With what's going on in World Rallycross at the moment, and they're going through a tough time now, the worm has turned a little bit. WRC has seemed to have momentum that WRX had a couple of years ago. We've had teams leaving left, right and centre recently. And, you know, effectively, there's only really Volkswagen dare I say, as a works team there. Will we see Volkswagen continue in a situation like that? Will they, you know, will they take a backward step and maybe leave Petter to run a private team again, and maybe Volkswagen go to WRC2 Pro or something like that? Could we see something like that, right?
I think technically, isn't it still run by Volkswagen Sweden?
Yes.
So they're not officially a Volkswagen entry. So as it's sort of outsourced anyway, I know it's run from the factory, but I think technically it's funded from external sources anyway. So no, I think we'll see Christofferson and Solberg continuing. You know, you'd never quite know where all the funding was coming from behind the scenes, but I think we'll see that carry on as normal. But yeah, I still wouldn't be surprised, and I think I even saw a headline somewhere this morning that Volkswagen are considering a WRC2 Pro entry, whatever this championship's called. I think I've seen that somewhere, so yeah, let's see.
Let's have him back. Come on, bring it on.
It's got written all over. He'll be in a car and Oliver will be in a car. Two-car Solberg team, R5, that's got to be up there.
I think he's already got one on order, hasn't he, for the Norwegian Championship. So, you know, there's not going to be loads of those cars floating around, is there? I think that's one thing we did touch upon last week. Isn't there only 16 cars or something? Isn't that the way the route they're going? Something along those lines. So, I don't know.
There's 20 for the following year, so, or in addition. So,
Okay. Right, so I think we go to any other business. Boys, Ryan Champion, would you like to go first?
Well, it's kind of sad news, because we talked about M Sport and we mentioned it, and the Volvos are finally up for sale.
Really?
Can you believe it?
Where are they up for sale?
So on Rally Cars for Sale, there was an advert last week that put the Volvos up for sale. I think that in various conditions, various shapes. When you imagine,
careful owner.
Yeah, exactly. When you imagine that, yeah, because the life of a recce car, as we all know, is not an easy one.
No.
Now, and they must be the hardest worked recce cars in existence. Some of them were built in 2001, I think, the first batch. So, you know, they've had an incredibly hard life. So they are up for sale. I think there is a couple of cars or a few cars going to Australia, but that'll be it. After Australia, that's the end of the Volvos. Some have already been sold. Some are still available. But, yeah, I think that's really is the end of a WRC era, because they've almost become as iconic and legendary as the rally cars themselves.
I can tell you that they haven't gone to Australia.
There is certainly one in Australia, supposedly.
Well, it must have made its own way there.
I can even give you the registration number, but anyway.
Okay. I won't talk about the three Focuses that I know that went.
Yeah, but they've got four drivers there.
True.
Focuses. Oh,
Focus recce cars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Trevor Agnew?
Two words. Stefan Prevo.
That was
just the most incredible interview I've heard for a long, long time.
Trev, we don't do interviews. You've got to get it right. We're not journalists, so we never do interviews. We just talk to people and they just talk to us.
Conversations and bits of it, you know, it's inevitable is going to happen. But there's one particular part of that. If you have not listened to that conversation and last week's show, you need to go back and listen to it. And the world will be talking about it if you can get that out. I can't believe you haven't clipped it and put it somewhere. It's just fascinating.
I'll be completely and utterly open and honest on this, in that I listened to it as obviously we record it, goes out saying, and then I listened to it back, and there was a little tiny part of me, I thought, do I need to just make him aware that people are going to listen to this? Or did he think it was a conversation? But Ryan and I spoke about it, and he knew what, you know, he's just that type of guy. So,
and not only that, he's loved the feedback, because as the feedback's been coming in, I've been sending it to him.
Yeah.
And his first reply was crazy with 3 exclamation marks. And the second one was, I like it, with a smiley face and tears coming from under his eyes.
Yeah. So, you know, it has gathered momentum. I have had messages about it and everything else. And for me, what was funny enough, somebody asked me about it only this morning, who'd only listened to it yesterday. And for me, I had made some notes and I didn't touch any of the notes that I'd made that I wanted to talk to him about, because it was possibly my favorite ones. And I don't really like naming the favorite ones that we've done, because they're all different and they all bring something different to the podcast. And I think, dare I say, but without sounding a bit arty, the listening experience, dare I say. But they're the best ones, where we basically say very little and they say a lot. And I think it was that one and probably Derek Dornacy last season, you know, for this year, two of my favorite ones that I think we've ever done, because they were very much like that. And the feedback we got from both of them was very much like, so basically our listeners don't like hearing our voices, but they like hearing our guests' voices, is where it got to. So there you go. Maybe that's a recipe for moving forward, that we don't say a lot, right? Trev, we don't say anything at all. So there you go.
Second piece of other, any, have we got time?
Yeah, of course.
Greatest of all time has been bandied about all weekend and since the weekend. So is Sebastian Loeb the GOAT?
The GOAT?
Yeah, that's what GOAT means. Greatest of all time.
Right, okay. I didn't know. I was wondering what that meant.
There you go. You know now?
Yeah.
Discuss.
Do you know there's a man over in the Sudan that was found making love to a goat and he was forced to marry it? True story, then. Anyway, not rally related, but still, there you go. Factual, nevertheless. I'm at my end of the business, boys. Jack Benyon.
Hang on. Trev asked a question.
Oh, sorry. Go on, Trev.
Is Sebastian Loeb the GOAT?
Of course, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
it's
difficult to compare eras, isn't it? We heard it a lot at the weekend. For anybody who watched the F1, how can you compare Hamilton against Senna or Jim Clark? And I think quite rightly, it's difficult in rallying terms. But ultimately, he was 9 times world champion. He's come back 6 years after retiring and won another world rally in a different era with different cars, with closer competition than ever. Yes, he is.
I think the weekend has to be, if it's not the best victory, it has, certainly in the top 3, no doubt about it whatsoever. Incredible to do what he did at the weekend. I just think Roar was pretty special as well.
He was, but not consistently.
Yeah, you said that.
Right,
GB. Years, best car, best team, and all of that. I'm not saying he isn't. I'm just throwing it out there, and I'm saying it. Royal to go, Monte Carlo in particular, the hardest rally ever, to win 3 years in a row, 3 different manufacturers, and to do it in an era when nobody else was doing anything like that. That was exceptional, I think. But it's, as you say, it's so hard to compare different eras as to who is the best, but it's certainly a tough competition between those two, I think.
And what Roll did was he moved professionalism on in WRC, didn't he? In terms of drivers, in terms of fitness, in terms of his approach, his pace notes.
Yeah.
He definitely moved things on, but he knew the rallies he liked. He concentrated on the rallies he liked and avoided the ones he didn't.
Yeah, as Daniel Alain has done from a co-driving point of view, you know. He's still smoking 15 kilos heavier, according to Seb Loeb. And still win rallies. There you go.
Fair play to him. Fair play to him. Right. My any of the businesses, plural. Jack Benyon's not with us this week. Whether he's getting his hair done ready for the weekend. Of course, he is out on the opening round of the MN Circuit Rally Championship, sat alongside Paul O'Neill. And best of luck to him. I'm going to try and get across and take the boy over to watch him and maybe get his autograph, that type of thing, maybe get a picture taken with him. So good luck to Jackie Boy Benyon on that. Ryan Champion, I have to take issue with something.
Doesn't surprise me.
Right. You said to me last week, let's get Oshin on, because he's got stuff going on. He'll tell us about it. Brilliant. We got Oshin on, and Oshin, our door is always open. You can come at any time you like, by the way. But there was obviously something in the offering, because this week he announced he's going to make the competitive debut of Orica's R4 car. Maybe they did our old podcast about R4 and chose not to mention it. I don't know, but I'm only guessing.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm only guessing. But Ossian Price will be making the R4's competitive debut for the ASM team over in Barcelona. Apparently, he was out there last week. And, yeah, he's going to be doing Rally Cooled de Granada in Spain. And probably that's not how you pronounce it, but still, there you go. Right, folks, that is the end of the podcast. Boys, thank you so
much. Mr. Champion, are you allowed to speak about the 911 RGT rally spec car that you've driven recently?
Yes, I am.
Go on.
No, I don't want to know.
I'm now allowed to do that.
I'll go on then.
So in Dirt Rally 2.0, launched in February, we've got the 911 RGT. And so that's undergone some recent development. Hopefully doing a bit more development with it this week. And it sounds to business and is an awful lot of fun to drive.
Have you drove a real one?
Yes, I have, albeit briefly. Very, very briefly.
Okay.
But it's pretty cool, I have to say.
Okay, have you seen the thing? By the way, John Armstrong was meant to be with us this week. Apologies, John. We have spoke, but John will definitely be with us next week. You've seen this thing, what he's done with the virtual reality, kind of reality and the video game kind of combined. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it looks pretty mad, doesn't it?
It looks nuts, and I want to talk to him about it. So I'm going to have him on next week. He was going to be on with us this week, but circumstances went against us.
I shall tell him tomorrow that you'll definitely have him on next week.
No, I've messaged him. He's already done me kind of cheers, dude, and all that. He spoke to me at a level. It's all right. It's fine. Right. So that's the end of the podcast, folks. I hope you've enjoyed our recap or our revisit of what happened on Rally Spain. We hope we lived up to your expectations of what the podcast was going to be. If we've missed anything, by all means, put us straight. You know how to find us now. It's studio@absoluterally.co.uk. You can drop us messages, of course, as our friend did at the top of the podcast, the one that we read out, or you can send us a tweet. You know, Twitter's quite popular, isn't it, these days? You can use Twitter, @absolute_rally, of course, on Twitter, facebook.com/absoluterally. Trevor Agnew, you know how to find him on Twitter. You know how to find Ryan Champ, you know how to find me. And do me a favour, if you've got your phone with you and you're doing Twitter and stuff like that, on Saturday, just keep tweeting Jack Benyon. You can tweet him anything. Just keep tweeting him, just so his phone keeps pinging.
Hang on. Let's come up with a hashtag.
Hashtag hair.
Hashtag hair.
Yeah. Yeah, should we do hashtag hair? Right, okay. Let's do hashtag hair. Hashtag hair for JB. So anything you've got there. If you want to send them some hair suggestions, maybe some photographs of, you know, in a bygone era where there used to be pictures of people, but for some reason when you went into a hairdresser, I don't remember because I've got no hair now, but back in the day, you used to go in, there'd be pictures, but almost black and white, moody, on the wall of perhaps a suggested hairstyle. Find some of those, send them to Jack Benyon, hashtag hair. There you go. Right, that genuinely is the end of the podcast, folks. It has been a joy. We will be back next week. I say John Armstrong will be with us next week, and there may be one or two other guests as well, just to break it up a little bit for you. But Trev, thank you so much for joining us this week.
You're welcome. Anytime.
We'll have you anytime, so to speak. That sounded a bit creepy. Ryan Champion, thank you.
You're welcome.
See you next week.
Virtually.
But yeah, obviously, I don't want to see you. That'd be weird. Folks, we'll be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.